Chapter 4, The Life Cycle.
In some ways, mankind was incredibly diverse. We like to say that each person was like a snowflake, unique, precious, and sooner or later covered in exhaust and dog urine. Yet, all of our lives traced roughly the same arc from beginning to end, and passed through roughly the same milestones. It was a process we called the life cycle, because it reminded us of a popular stationary exercise bike that was exhilarating but grueling and wound up leaving you off exactly where you started. What was this life cycle? Well, perhaps we can answer that question with another one. What has four legs in the morning, two legs in the afternoon, and three in the evening? At first blush, the answer to that ancient riddle of the Sphinx would seem obvious. A four-legged animal that had two legs amputated following a terrible lunchtime accident, then had one of them reattached just before dinner. But there's also a more figurative answer to the mystery. Man. For in the morning of our lives, we crawled on all fours, young, small, and vulnerable. In the prime of the afternoon, we walked erect, adult, robust, and independent. And by the evening, we walked with a cane, old, small, vulnerable once more. And then, of course, at night, we died. No legs. That part was too depressing, even for the Sphinx. The chronology and physical stages of the life cycle took place in the sequence that they're presented in this chapter. We did not have the option of starting life as an adolescent or jumping from middle age back to infancy to grab a quick nap or aging backwards, which is the premise of The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, a film that we urge you to avoid, lest it steal three precious earth hours from you. But we did have some flexibility in the order with which certain personal and societal milestones could occur. For instance, we could give birth before marriage, or be circumcised after middle age, turns of events which were respectively common and really super not at all common, like ever, never. It was these milestones, shared and celebrated with loved ones and friends, that helped form the chapter breaks in the stories of our lives, lending our time on Earth much of its dignity and poignancy, and all of its redeemable gift certificates, the exception being funerals. Hey, sorry about your dad. Please enjoy this $50 iTunes card. Was considered a funeral don't. Which once again brings us to death. In truth, pretty much everything brought us to death. The famed philosopher Jim Morrison once observed, "No one here gets out alive." And that was certainly true, although not everybody ended up alone and bloated after ODing in a bathtub either. But dying wouldn't have been that sad or frightening if only we didn't know it was going to happen. But alas, we were, as far as we could tell, the only creatures who were aware of their own mortality. I mean, most animals you could kill right in front of their friends and they would just keep on chewing their cud. At most, idly wondering a few days later where Frank was. But humans, we knew the horrible truth. That was the price we paid for consciousness, and many would argue we got ripped off. So how did we react to this terrible knowledge? Some of us, with paralyzing fear. Others chose to use this life to feverishly prepare for the afterlife they hoped would follow. And a few of us reacted by adhering to the phrase carpe diem, seizing each and every diem with as much urgency and spirit as we could muster, because paradoxically, it was only by accepting the fleeting nature of our existence that we could fully appreciate how much every moment, just like every person and every snowflake, was unique and precious. Having said that, if you're immortal, go fuck yourself.
Birth.
Around 40 weeks after that drunken night in the cabin, the adult, hopefully, female's uterus began contracting. This forced the fetus onto the cervix, thinning and dilating it, and rupturing the amniotic sac. As the painful contractions increased in frequency and intensity, 8 to 14 hours, the 8-pound, 22-inch infant journeyed down the birth canal towards the vagina. The baby's head passed under the pubic bone and began to stress the perineum, the tissue between the vagina and the rectum, often tearing it. Through a storm of screams, amniotic fluid, mucus, and blood, the final pushes introduced the bundle of joy to the outside world, he, she wailing uncontrollably. And with that, the easy part was over.
Childhood.
Childhood was roughly the period between the end of infancy and the day we were big enough to hold a scythe. It was the child's job to play during this carefree time, to learn through observation, imagination, and interaction about the real world around them. And it was the job of a loving parent to skillfully distort the reality of that world. This often involved overt lying, on topics ranging from the physical location of the recently deceased, to the existence of gift-giving fictional characters, to why Mommy's special juice made her all silly.
Nailed it. Kids 4 to 9 years old.
Toilet-trained, able to dress themselves, yet still a few years away from the embittering ravages of puberty, kids saw the world the way we wished we always could, as magical, mysterious, and full of places it was okay to be naked. They were the only group of people who excited rather than annoyed us by learning things we already knew.
Adolescence.
Somewhere between the ages of 10 and 13, depending on how hormone-enhanced their beef was, children entered adolescence, a.k.a. the decutening. Our bodies grew taller and hormonal changes introduced secondary sex characteristics. It was a period marked by turbulent emotions and excruciating self-consciousness and a level of masturbation so furiously excessive it tested the human body's resistance to friction-induced combustion.
Spotlight on masturbation.
Masturbation. Masturbation was the practice of tricking one's genitals into believing themselves popular. For both boys and girls, the adolescent discovery that intense physical gratification was literally an arm's length away marked the end of childhood and the beginning of an awful lot of masturbating. But the practice was almost universally discouraged by society, especially on the good couch.
Young adulthood.
Young adulthood was a magical time for us. We were old enough to enjoy the privileges society could provide, but still young enough to skirt its responsibilities. It was a period to indulge wild fantasies with regard to sex, intoxicants, and the likelihood of one's punk emo band, the Sad-Eyed Cock Monkeys, making it big. We were at the height of our physical powers, and at times felt ourselves immortal, which, as we have made and will continue to make heartbreakingly clear throughout this audiobook, we were not. But it was fun to pretend, and of course the booze made it easier.
In the ruins, universities.
Found yourself in a quadrangle courtyard surrounded by impressive stone buildings that fill you with a simultaneous sense of pride, dread, and wooziness? Welcome to college, where many of our brightest 18 to 21-year-olds explored their bottomless thirst for what in some cases was knowledge. Colleges were hotbeds of experimentation. Educational, chemical, sexual, and most annoyingly, political. After 4 years of living in this fake world, you were considered prepared to live in the real one and you graduated. This experience would cost either your parents or you $200,000, unless you were good at throwing an orange ball into a round hoop, in which case it was free. Many students participated in what was known as Greek life after the ancient society whose intellectual legacy it shat upon.
Love.
Of all the intangible emotions and states of mind experienced by man, love is by far the easiest to explain. Love was simply liking another person very, 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 very much. So that's it. But you would not believe how much time and effort poets, painters, philosophers, songwriters, and most unfortunately, teenagers expended trying to express this unbelievably basic and simple feeling.
Great love stories. Antony and Cleopatra.
Known in Roman tabloids as Antopatra, they were true pioneers, the first celebrity couple, and the founders of the Nile High Club.
John Smith and Pocahontas.
In 1607, explorer John Smith, not his real name, was saved from execution at the hands of a Virginia tribe by the chief's daughter, Pocahontas. Their romance set the stage for 400 years of warm relations between whites and Indians.
Edward VIII and Wallace Simpson.
He was the King of England. She was a twice-divorced American, but they fell in love over their mutual admiration for the Nazis.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Before Bonnie and Clyde, traveling across country killing people and stealing their money was not considered romantic.
John and Yoko.
Yoko Ono was one of the most cutting-edge performance artists of the 20th century until she met John Lennon. Their relationship was responsible for the breakup of Fluxus, her world-renowned conceptual art collective. Fluxus fans never forgave him.
No one came closer to capturing the essence of love than the romantic poets. One of them, Lord Byron, 1788 to 1824, wrote this immortal ode as a 15-year-old.
She walks in beauty, like the night of cloudless climes and starry skies. Her eyes are like two pools of light. I really do doth like her eyes. Her smile canst fill the study hall and make of homeroom fairyland. And pleased I was to learn this fall, she'd sit two seats from me in band. Alas, the cheers she leads are for the captain of the cricket team, who really is a total jerk, which doesn't rhyme, but I don't care. Written by Lord Byron, to be folded up and passed across the line of desks to the left.
Marriage.
Marriage was the sacred institution on which our society was based, and therefore had to be protected from gay people. You see, sometimes when a man and a woman's father loved the mutual economic and social benefits a partnership of sorts could provide very much, the woman's father drew up a contract for a betrothal involving his daughter and some cattle. Later on, women gained the right to make their own decisions about who they would marry. That's when men began shaving.
Parenthood.
For most of man's existence, religious imperatives, agrarian workloads, and a total lack of reproductive knowledge led many couples to have very, very large families. However, advances in contraception and industrialized food production allowed modern couples to have fewer offspring while leaving the total weight of families constant.
What it took to raise a child.
Africa, a village. Somalia, a guerrilla army. India, a shanty town. Brazil, a soccer ball. America, a television. New York, a West Indian nanny. Romania, a 500-bed orphanage with a staff of two. The Middle East, generations of hatred.
Middle age.
Middle age is the first phase of life marked by decline in recognition of one's mortality. Physical vitality, muscle mass, and intellectual acuity all begin their inexorable downward slide during this period. On the plus side, you can now afford jet skis. Though middle age was seen as the period of time between 40 and 60 years of age, this varied greatly due to changing life expectancies. For instance, victims of midlife crisis during the dark ages would comfort themselves with the thought that 20 is the new 16.
Old age.
The final stage of life, old age, was in many ways a mirror image of childhood. Life's hard labors complete, the elderly returned to a time of less responsibility where, as with children, little was expected. People once again spoke to you in an incredibly condescending tone. On the other hand, the elderly could get away with all manner of shit, up to and including promiscuity, racist blather, and the inappropriate hugging of Jamaican nurses. Early man revered the elderly, and they occupied a space of honor in the community. In modern times, we kept them away from us in condo developments because it made us sad to think about dying.
Death.
Death, it was often observed, was just another part of life. Usually, this observation was made right after someone died, and mostly because we didn't know what else to say and didn't want to be rude. While the rites associated with death were ostensibly performed for the benefit of the dead, in reality they served to provide the survivors with the comfort, guidance, and tranquility needed to complete their own journey to the unfortunate day when their ribcage became gopher housing.
The bucket list.
A bucket list was a wish list of things to do before one's imminent death. This example dates from first century Rome. We'll be right back.
Caligula bucket list. Dissolve Senate, check. Fuck sister, check. Declare myself God, check. Appoint horse to Senate, check. Sodomize army, check. Throw babies to lions, check. Find the joy in my life? No check.
Morning.
When a person died, his family, friends, and a sallow-cheeked, formaldehyde-scented man they'd just met organized a funeral. This ceremony was a chance for the living to say goodbye, albeit a few days too late. With his body looking on, the departed would be eulogized, his good points emphasized, his bad points somewhat glossed over, his soul's current whereabouts confidently asserted. This provided the bereaved with closure and the unbereaved with credit for showing up.
Okay, notes for Dad's eulogy, thanks for coming, deep in grief, etc. Special man, tragic death on merry-go-round, great father to six kids. Okay, good qualities. Handy around the house when present. Awesome sixth husband. Always supported me and my brother. No, sometimes didn't hinder my brother. Okay. War hero. How he wanted to be one. Loved Wizard of Id. Molestation? No. Okay. Happy memories. Florida vacation. Day 2. Day 8. Christmas. Oh, bike. Right. 1982. Oh my god, the mistrial. Oh my god, I mentioned the mistrial. All right. Funny dad stories. Funny dad stories. Funny. Funny dad stories. Oh, the time he saw John Elway at the airport. Okay. Alley incident. So vomit. Oh, Karen and the pistol. Punchline. Dad, she's your sister. Dad, she's your sister. Closing metaphor. Putting bird out of misery. Done.
FAQs. Future alien questions.
What was the happiest period in a human's life?
Either the one immediately preceding the period one was currently in, or the one immediately following it.
What did humans remember from the period between conception and birth?
We retain no long-term memory of anything that occurred to us between conception and roughly the age of 2 or 3. Most of us, therefore, simply assumed it was a time of unceasing abuse.
When did you start becoming sexually active?
Biologically, reproduction was possible from puberty. Legally, we were supposed to refrain from sex until reaching the age of consent. This could vary anywhere from, oh my god, that's disgusting, to, really? You waited that long? That's a long time to wait. In many countries, the standard was 18. 6 months following were a probationary period in which the barely legal adolescent was thoroughly photographed and scrutinized by a panel of masturbating experts.
Could both men and women be homosexuals?
Yes, but not with each other. It was a...
What were the most common ways of proposing marriage?
A man would most commonly declare his intentions by presenting his beloved with a diamond ring on a large television during a packed sporting event. In the rare cases when a woman asked the man to marry, she would often do it by urinating on a stick and showing him the results.
In a population of billions, how did you decide whom to marry?
Well, most of us believed we had one perfect soulmate somewhere on Earth. Luckily for us, that person usually lived not too far away, also spoke the same language, and was of an equivalent level of physical attractiveness, and shared our love of mountain biking.
Parenthood seems like a lot of work.
It sure was. But for all the hassle and worry, once in a while came a moment of pure innocence. It touched your heart and tickled your funny bone. Nah, fuck it, it was a lot of work.
How did humans cope with the finality of death, the knowledge that one day they and all their accumulated knowledge and experiences would be lost from the Earth?
We tried not to think about it.
Seriously, though, that must have been hard not to think about. One day you're there, and the next, you're gone.
Can we talk about something else? Please?
But given that knowledge How did you justify wasting your time on unimportant things when every minute brought you that much closer to...
Hey, look! Another chapter!